Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the ESPN Crick Info Stump Mic Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of ESPN Crick Info Stump Mic Podcast. I am Srinath Sripath, and we're talking to someone whose voice and face you'd instantly recognize. Someone who played a big role in transforming cricketers' fortunes, making them millionaires in a matter of seconds over the years. It is Richard Madley, whose Twitter handle will introduce him to you, the famous IPL auctioneer, the hammer man, as some call him. Hey, Richard, welcome to Stump Mic.
Oh, what a great pleasure it is to join you. Thank you for inviting me.
Our pleasure, our pleasure. Also with us is ESPN Crick Info's own IPL encyclopedia, an analyst and auction advisor with teams in a past life, Gaurav Sundaraman. Welcome back, Gaurav.
Hi, Srinath, and hi, Richard. Great to be here again talking about the IPL auction.
Right. Listener, as you know, we're weeks away from the IPL auction. Now, Richard, let's start with a story we've heard from your time at the IPL auction about how Andrew Flintoff bought you a few beers, I guess, after you made him a millionaire in 2009. Was he the only one to do so?
Yeah, Andrew Flintoff was in the second IPL auction, and indeed, we were selling in US dollars for the first episodes of the auction, 1.55 million. So he bought me a beer, but funny enough, Kevin Peterson still owes me one.
KP, if you're listening, you'd be best placed to honor Richard with a beer for your own big bumper sale at the IPL auction. Richard, let's go back all the way to your starting point in auctions. We only know you through IPL auctions, of course, here in India. Tell us a bit more about how you got into auctioneering. We hear you're also a league cricketer. You play the game very often.
My father was an auctioneer. My father-in-law was an auctioneer. So you could say that auctioneering was in my blood. And I grew up in a family business who conducted auctions primarily of real estate and antiques. And I aspired one day to fill the shoes that my father occupied on the rostrum in his auction business in Wales. If I couldn't be an auctioneer, there was one thing I'd have loved to have done, and that is to have been a professional cricketer. I aspired to play county cricket here in the UK. It would have been a dream to have played Test cricket. So I had that combination of being a sportsman who could stand up on stage and count loudly. And so I guess it was a fairly natural thing for me to move into auctioning cricket memorabilia. That was how I kind of started in the cricket world, auctioning off the bats and the photographs of famous players from times past. And through through my association with selling cricket memorabilia, then I was introduced to the world of cricket, of Test cricket, and I met a number of Test cricketers whose auctions I would conduct for them as they raised money for various charities throughout the UK. And so it was that combination together of cricket and being an auctioneer, I guess, that gave me the credentials necessary to be considered to advise IMG at the formation of the IPL.
Yeah, the one thing that even I didn't know till recently, Richard, is about how you devise the auction. So you basically set up the whole process before taking over itself. So I'm guessing you got to work with the likes of Lalit Modi, who kind of conceptualized the tournament itself.
Yeah, the IPL was dreamt up in the UK in the very wet summer of 2007. It was dreamt up not at a cricket ground, but at a tennis ground at the famous Wimbledon tennis courts. Where Lalit Modi was a guest of IMG at the tennis, and he met up with Andrew Wildblood, who was the vice president of IMG and responsible for cricket globally, and said to Andrew, look, you know, we need to revolutionize the game of cricket in India. You know, we have a nation who are passionate about the game. You know, we have a test side, you know, that is dominant, but really, you know, we need to reorganize, restructure cricket within India. And I've got this idea about a new league. And the following week, IMG were tasked with the responsibility of looking at various ways of launching sporting leagues across the world. And they looked at basketball, baseball, American football. They looked mainly at American models. And the concept of the IPL was developed around a number of meetings in London during the autumn. And then the idea was that they would first of all sign up, commit the world's top cricketers to play in the league. And once they had got their commitment to make it a fair and open and transparent system, they thought that they would conduct an auction in order that the players could be distributed equitably through the 8 franchises. And I was called in then as a career auctioneer. I'd been conducting predominantly fine art auctions then for over 30 years in London and New York. So my knowledge as an auctioneer is that I understand the laws of auctions, the rules and regulations, things like bidding increments, reserves, pacing of the sale, terms and conditions, all those sort of things that that IMG needed some advice on. So my advice to them was to structure an auction of players in exactly the same way as you'd structure an auction of porcelain or paintings or oriental carpets. But we had to get the terms and conditions nailed down. And that is what, that was my initial involvement. I was called in purely to advise. I spent a day with them and I didn't even think that I would be then invited to conduct the auction itself.
A very interesting story about IPL being founded in Wimbledon tennis court. You know, that is something really new, which we're hearing for the first time. Coming back to that that experience, especially when it involves such high-profile individuals, high-profile cricketers, high-profile board, did you have any worry in conducting this whole event?
I think there's a wonderful saying that ignorance is bliss. And I knew nothing about the reputation of Shah Rukh Khan, of Lalit Modi, of Vijay Mallya, and many others before I accepted the invitation to come to India to conduct the auction. I'd never been to India before. I'd always wanted to come. I'd watched the Indian cricket team play for many years. In fact, the first cricket match I ever watched was when India toured England in 1967. So I'd been a great fan of Indian cricket, but never been to the country. And I think that that probably was a huge advantage because had I really thought long and hard about what might happen or what could happen, the potential pitfalls, I might have been somewhat apprehensive about taking on the assignment in the first place. And it was only when I got to India, when I arrived at the Oberoi Hilton on February the 19th, 2008, and I saw an assembled posse of journalists and photographers all waiting outside the hotel itself. And I did wonder what they were there for. And then as I walked along, I actually walked from the Oberoi Hilton to the Wankhede Stadium with Andrew Wildblood and the IMG team to brief the team owners on the rules of the auction that would take place the following day. And that is when perhaps it dawned on me when I saw probably 100 or 200 journalists, cameramen outside the Wankhede Stadium, all asking questions about the auction that was about to take place. There was amongst them just one journalist from England who had come over representing The Guardian, I believe. And he looked at me and he said, "Richard, I think tomorrow is going to be a big day." And I said to him, I said, "I think you're right." And what an understatement that was, because the world of cricket changed on February the 20th, 2008. Nobody had any idea. Let me tell you this, that IMG and the BCCI and Lalit Modi in their wildest dreams had no idea what was going to happen in the ballroom at the Oberoi Hilton the following day. Because as soon as the first player came up under my hammer, then the world of cricket changed. And people were tuning in from all over the world. It was, although it was being just beamed out in India, there were followers in Australia, in South Africa, West Indies, and of course in England, who were watching this extraordinary event unroll throughout the day. And I consider myself extraordinarily fortunate that I was the person right in the middle carrying out the proceedings.
Do you remember who was the first player to be auctioned back then?
Yeah, I do remember. And obviously, I'm very fortunate that I have with me here in England my original auctioneer's sheet from the very first IPL auction. And the way that the auctions have been conducted, and it hasn't changed over the years, is that the players are divided into sets. And the first players offered for auction are the marquee players, the VIP players, the players who have been selected on reputation and price to be the first players out of the bag. And it's the term that I've used. I've said, you know, the next player coming out of the bag is, and in fact, what I mean is, but beside me on the rostrum is an assistant who has a velvet bag, and inside there are a number of either bales or balls or little cricket bats with the names of the players from that set inside, and they are drawn out at random. So although I am aware of who is in the set, and the set normally has six or eight players, on that day there were six small cricket balls in the bag. And the first player to be drawn out of the bag was Shane Warne. Shane Warne, the legendary Australian bowler. And his base price, his reserve price, was, again, we're selling in US dollars, $450,000. And I asked for an opening bid. I said, "Who'll bid me $450,000 now? I'm looking for an opening bid of $450,000. And up went the first paddle of the first player of the first auction of the IPL. And written on that name, and you must remember in those days, the teams had no name. The name of Jaipur went up. Manoj Badali raised his paddle at $450,000. And then I asked, "Is there any advance on that bid of $450,000? And nobody else bid. And I thought to myself, well, he's sold. Anyway, he's sold for his base price, but there's been no more competition for him. And at $450,000, sold to Jaipur. Oh, you recognize the sound there. Of course, with me in my hand, not only do I have the auctioneer's sheets, I've got the very gavel with which I sold the very first player at the very first auction. And I've used this gavel in every auction ever since. So Shane Warne was the first player out. And then, you know, there were five other players amongst there, but there's one player who stands out to me. Probably my favorite all-rounder of the time in Mahendra Singh Dhoni. MS Dhoni came out of the bag. And he had a base price of 400,000. So I opened the bidding and I asked for that opening bid of 400,000. And I went to 420, 450, 480, 500. Well, here now we've got an auction going now at 550, 600. And at $1,500,000, he was sold to the Chennai Super Kings. And I think it was when the hammer fell on MS Dhoni, then I knew that we had an auction going. And after that, it was quite extraordinary. People were just so caught up with the whole event. There was excitement in the room. There was excitement outside. And now there are people tuning in all over the world to find out what was happening in the Oberoi Hilton in that ballroom that day.
Yeah, we definitely don't remember that the first IPL winning captain, Shane Warne, did not have a counter bidder to his base price, which sounds absolutely ridiculous coming to think of it 12, 13 years on, Richard, which is pretty crazy.
Yes, I thought that at the time. When the paddle went up for Jaipur and then obviously to be rebranded the Rajasthan Royals, then I started to see the bidding differences between each franchise. And over the years, and I've conducted 11 IPL auctions, I've seen the bidding styles that have developed from different teams. The Rajasthan Royals are always very reserved. There is nothing flamboyant. It's well considered. They have a nominated paddle raiser, and they don't spend too much money. Well, certainly they didn't for the first 9 auctions. In fact, I think if you check, they got fined after the first auction for not spending enough money. And then other teams have different styles. You know, and again, you know, as an auctioneer, they're conducting proceedings. You know, I can read the room, you know, and I can see that some teams, you know, are perhaps a little bit more flamboyant than others. Some perhaps are perhaps a little bit erratic. But I've developed, luckily, I think, a very good rapport with all those team owners, and they could be the richest people in India. You know, they could be highly successful and influential people, but once they're in that room, they are purely bidders participating in an auction that I am conducting. And I liken the role of the auctioneer at the IPL to that of an umpire. And it's no coincidence that over the last couple of years, I have qualified as an ECB level 1 umpire. And there are indeed great similarities between umpiring a real live game of cricket and conducting the auction. I've got to be alert at all stages. I've got to have eyes that will scan from backward point to backward square leg on the boundary. I have to be able to observe any movements because some of the bidding can come in very, very late, and I have to make the call for what I see at the time, which, of course, you know, over the years, you know, has resulted in probably two incidents that were well recorded. Interestingly, both incidents concerned the Royal Challengers Bangalore, and I was going back to 2000 and about 2014, so we're going back 5 years, and Yuvraj Singh was being auctioned. I can't remember what his base price was. Doesn't matter, you know, but his base price, I think at the time was, it was round about, maybe $600,000. And the bidding went 650, 700, 750. And we got to $1 million. We got to $1 million. And the bidding was firmly with the Royal Challengers Bangalore, who I looked at, and they were happy with that bid. And then I scanned the room and I looked around, is there any advance on the bid of $1 million? And I looked around the room and I looked. I saw no further bidding, and my hammer came down. At that very moment, a cry came out from the back of the room. "I was bidding," said the Kolkata Knight Riders. Now, if I just explain how the ballroom works, the ballroom is a huge room, and the bids do come, as I say, in cricketing terms, from backward square leg on the boundary, and the Kolkata Knight Riders were fielding or playing at backward point. At that time, Mr. Malia said, "The player is mine." And I answered firmly and fairly and said, "Dr. Malia, I will decide in this situation." And I asked the Kolkata Knight Riders, I said to you, "I'd like to ask you a question. As my hammer came down, did your paddle go up?" And they said, "Yes, that is the case." And I said, "In that case, I will reopen the bidding." And there was uproar. There was uproar at the time, mainly from the Royal Challengers Bangalore. But I'm perfectly within my rights to do what I think is fair and right and proper. I didn't see the paddle go up as my hammer came down, but the Kolkata Knight Riders were telling me that that was the case, and I took them at their word. So we reopened the bidding, and the bidding went up, and it went up to 1 million 1, 1 million 2, 3. He sold for $1,400,000. So of course, he cost, in theory, in practice, the Royal Challengers Bangalore an additional $400,000. I don't think Dr. Malia has forgiven me ever since, but I did what I felt was right at the time. And if I'm umpiring a league game here in England, and if I think that I've got to give what I see and what I think is right, and I think I made the right decision in that case.
Richard, it's a very interesting experience, the one in which you had to decide who actually bid for the player when you can't really see him. The doubt I have is it the same process even in a normal auction? Do you actually do it exactly the same way when it does not deal with the IPL, your other art auctions, etc.? And the other question is, you do have video footage anyway. Isn't that a more fairer way of just figuring out whether they actually lifted the paddle in time?
No, good questions. I mean, the principles for conducting the IPL auction are exactly the same as conducting any auction of art, furniture, silver, carpets across the world. And the auctioneer, if he thinks that a bidder has raised his paddle as the hammer comes down, has the absolute right to reopen the bidding. But what I'm very, very clear, as I think you're very familiar with, that when my hammer comes down, I call out those four letters that everybody connects me with, and I say, "Sold." Now, if in a situation, as we had with Yuvraj Singh, my hammer had come down, but I had not said sold, and therefore the Knight Riders were quite right in challenging or questioning my decision, and I was quite happy to overrule in that case. But I'm a human being, not a machine. Now, if you want to employ machines, and we did for the next auction, have the facility to record the bidding with a camera on each table. Therefore, with a camera on the auctioneer as well, had there been a dispute in the following auction, we had the facility to go back and replay the bidding, and we could synchronize my hammer coming down and the paddle going up.
I said a sort of a third umpire at the auction.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. A third umpire. I mean, yeah, I think the time that there was a dispute over Yuvraj Singh either playing for Kolkata or for RCB, I just explained that that I am the sole arbiter. There is one umpire in the IPL auctioneer. There's not two. There's not three. And there are times up there when that, when you've got to make decisions that you think are right at the time. So I think having access to technology could be useful if needed. So I know it's there, but I'm pleased to say that since that auction in 2014, I never needed to use it. I'm not sure if that technology exists now, but I think it was of some comfort to the teams to know it was there. But if you think in 11 auctions, if I've offered 2,000 players over that period to have only had two disputes, it's not a bad record.
That's an amazing record, Richard. I think everybody remembers the IPL auction just for you and the way you actually go about conducting the whole event. Coming back to the preparation of the auction, do you actually go through all the players, figure out what they do, at least the main players, how to pronounce the slightly difficult names? Do you do some kind of a rehearsal, or do you actually prepare for it leading up to the auction?
Yeah, very much so. I normally get a list of the players in the auction given to me once the eight franchises have made their selection. Remember, every cricketer in the world wants to be in the IPL auction. So that answers any critics I get about people thinking it's a slave market. Yeah, I will say straight away, believe me, you know, there are thousands of cricketers across the world who are willing and able and wanting to be in the IPL auction. So I dismiss that that thought quite quickly. I get sent the pared down listing, which is probably a list of perhaps between 350 and 500 players who could appear in the big auctions. That's the three-yearly auction when all the players are back in the hat. And I start to read that list and work on it about 2 weeks prior to the sale. So I would receive it emailed to me in confidence in England 2 weeks beforehand, player's name, their specialism, their teams they played for before, their age, and a lot of these players I know, not personally, but I know them as players already, because during the IPL tournament, from its inception, I have watched more IPL games on television than probably many people in India. I felt it was very important that I should be aware of who these players are, who the teams are, because it helps me to know the way that the players, that the teams are building their players. So I put a lot of work in to the background of planning for the auction. Pronunciations, this can be a challenge to me. Obviously players from Australia, South Africa, West Indies and England, okay, but there are some Sri Lankan and Indian surnames that I struggle with, and therefore I would sit down with somebody a day or two before the auction when I've arrived in Bangalore or Chennai or Mumbai, and sit down with an Indian speaker who will take me through the pronunciations of the players that I'm perhaps struggling with, so that I hope that I won't embarrass anybody on the day itself. But there's not a huge amount more of preparation you can do for the auction, apart from a very clear mind. I keep myself physically fit, because for the big auctions, I'm on stage for 2 days. We start at 10:30 a.m., normally finish at about end of the afternoon. I mean, quite similar in many ways to a real cricket match. And we have a morning session where all the big names come out, and then we have a session after lunch, and then we have a cup of tea, and then another session then. So in many ways, it actually emulates the world of test cricket, if not T20 cricket. So yeah, I've got to be on my mettle or at all times. I've got to be able to look for that bid on the first player I sell on day one, as well as the last player that I sell on day two. So physically it's demanding, mentally it's demanding, but it is also the greatest honor that any auctioneer could have bestowed upon him.
Yeah, Richard, you brought up both things already. I had this question on the auction system earlier. The IPL auction itself is a unique spectacle in that it is one of the, probably the only big T20 league to hold the auction system and not the draft system. You have mentioned about criticism. There have been people who've called it a cruel, undignified sort of an exercise and favored the draft, which is a more popular way of selecting players across other leagues. I know you're an auction insider, but of course you also know your cricket. You watch a lot of cricket. Do you think it's a fairer way to measure, considering market demands and supplies, the auction system over the draft system? And secondly, have you been invited by other leagues and other tournaments from around the world to do auctions for them or conduct draft processes?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the IPL auction and the role of the auctioneer is that it differs in one huge way that people don't realize as far as the auctioneer is concerned. Because I make my living as an auctioneer. I've conducted auctions for now over 40 years across the world. And my incentive as an auctioneer is to drive prices to the highest level that I can on the day. I am incentivized financially to drive prices upwards in all the auctions I conduct, apart from the IPL, where there is no incentive whatsoever for the team owners or for the auctioneer to drive the prices upwards. The only people who benefit from high prices are the players. So you will notice that my style of auctioneering and when conducting the IPL auctioneer is quite restrained. I don't get excited. I don't try and hype up the prices. I don't plead for the Mumbai Indians to bid one more bid, please, against the Delhi Daredevils. It's a difference. It's a very different style of conducting an auction, and perhaps one that people don't realise. That to me, if one player sells or no players sell or they all sell, it doesn't affect me financially. It's a very different auction. Yeah, and I'm sure it's one that Hugh Edmeads, yeah, has picked up on, and there is no financial incentive to achieve high prices. However, that should not be the job is as much as conducting fair play, making sure that the bids are fairly distributed around the eight franchises. The draft system is an interesting system because we have here in England at last a new short form of the game starting next summer. It is called the 100. And for the 100, players' selection process took place last week and they decided to hold a draft. Now, the draft is not as exciting. It is not as competitive. It is not as compelling as an auction process. And what the IPL auction does, again, which is subliminal, is not only does it attract the players into the auction and give a chance for the teams to put their play their t- for the sort of team owners to put their playing teams together, but it's a massive marketing launch for the tournament that normally takes place about 6 weeks later. Yeah, and it's, and I meet people, you know, in the streets in London, you know, who stop me to talk about the IPL auction as an event. It's like the most extraordinary launch pad for the most exciting T20 tournament in the world. So I think it works very well for the owners. I think it works very well, very, very well for the players. For the auctioneer, you know, he has to be, I'd say, slightly subdued in his selling style.
There was one incident once in the IPL where I think there was a rule about the maximum bid for a particular player. If two teams actually reached that, there was a secret tie break. Do you remember anything about that? Do you remember, I think it was Kieran Pollard who was bought by the Mumbai Indians on a secret tie break. Were you privy to the actual cost of that?
I remember it well. I remember it well because, yeah, indeed, it was Kieran Pollard. And this was the situation whereby there was only a certain amount of funds remaining in the team's kitty, in their purse, in which they came to the auction. And we anticipated that probably at least two teams would want to buy Kieran Pollard. And yet they only had then $750,000 in their funds. And therefore, I conducted the auction in the normal way, but I invited people to raise their paddles when Kieran Pollard came up. And we had a four-way tied bid. At $750,000, the Chennai Super Kings had their paddle raised. The Kolkata Knight Riders paddle was raised. The Royal Challengers Bangalore were there. And, of course, the Mumbai Indians. At which stage, Lalit Modi came on to the stage and I stood down. And he invited each of those teams to submit a secret bid, a confidential bid over and above the $750,000 which Kieran Pollard would receive. And in that envelope, they would write down the sum which they were prepared to pay over and above the hammer price, which would go to the BCCI. And so all four franchise holders, RCB, KKR, CSK, and Mumbai Indians, all wrote down their extra bids and submitted them to the stage, whereby 5 minutes later, Lalit Modi came on stage and he announced that the winner of Kieran Pollard were the Mumbai Indians. And nobody knows how much was written inside that envelope. And maybe we never will. One of the great secrets of the IPL auction.
Oh, too bad, too bad. We were hoping for a revelation at the end, Richard. In any case, the way that was going, I thought Pollard made about a couple of million dollars and we'll probably get to find out finally on Stump Mike. Just a couple of questions to wrap up the episode. It's been brilliant listening to you and especially finding out what Gaurav said about how it was conceptualized at Wimbledon. The last question I had was about how after 11 years of the IPL auction, you were pretty vocal about your disappointment about not making it for the 12th, which happened last year. First part of the question, of course, is did the BCCI communicate it to you in advance? And secondly, there's a new BCCI regime in place now, as you'd know. If invited back or called back for the IPL auction, would you'd not think twice before taking it, would you?
When I received the notification that I would not be conducting the IPL auction last December, it was a short one-liner that said my services were no longer required. And I mean, I think over the course of the last half an hour, you have detected my passion for the IPL and the fact that I've been involved in it from conception, right the way through. And I'm really, really very, very fond of it. And therefore, I think it was the way in which that I was not selected. And in sporting terms, if it had happened to me in the Indian cricket team, I would hope that perhaps Ravi Shastri would just take me to one side and say, look, Richard, you know, you've been a useful player. Thank you very much over the years. But, you know, we're bringing in younger blood now. There's more talent coming through. We'd like somebody else. And I would completely understand that. You know, in fact, you know, I have said that, in my opinion, the next IPL auctioneer should be Indian. He or she should be younger, a lot younger than me. And I would have been delighted and still would be delighted to train them. And I think it would be wonderful to see a new young Indian IPL auctioneer on the rostrum conducting proceedings. So it wasn't the very fact that I was dropped or relieved of my duties. It was just the fact that there was no explanation. There was no thank you. It was just a goodbye. So I guess at the time, yeah, I was bruised, and I was quite vocal. But you know, time is a great healer, and now I'm just very proud to be still known as the IPL auctioneer on Twitter. You know, I'm still at IPL auctioneer, and I receive tweets on a daily basis, almost from fans across India and beyond. Talking about the auction, and yes, of course, if I was invited back to India, a country that I've called now my second home, I would be honoured and, of course, delighted to accept that invitation.
Superb. If you've not noticed, Gaurav is one of those fans. He had actually asked you recently who was the first player to be auctioned off in a Twitter conversation. And in fact, you responded almost instantly to him saying Shane Warne was the person.
Okay. Well, Gaurav, I think you then asked me who was the second player. And not even I can remember that. But I mean, it's interesting how little footage that exists from that first auction back in 2008 when the world of cricket changed.
Yeah, and we're not even talking 50 years, we're talking 12, 13 years before just now. Richard, just before we let you go, we started off with the Flint Off story. Have there been cricketers who've come and said thank you to you? Have there been Englishmen as Joss Butler or Chris Wokes or Moeen Ali walked up to you or spoken to you about making them millionaires or making them loads of money? What's the strangest to kindest act you've seen from a cricketer? I know you're just the agent for doing it, but that's how we remember it. We remember a 1.5 million bid through your face on TV. That's how we remember it. And lastly, is there a tell-all book coming from behind the scenes of the IPL auction, 11, 12 years of your time? Are we in for that anytime soon?
I meet only a few of the players because, you know, the auction takes place during the playing season. Most Test cricketers are involved playing Test cricket around the world. So I meet very few, if any, around the tournament itself. I was fortunate and privileged to meet MS Dhoni in 2008 at the start of the first IPL tournament. And I had to say how humbled I was by his modesty and his charm. He was very understated, and I just thought, what a gentleman. The other person who came to me and was humbled in many ways by the price that I had achieved for him was back in 2011 when Gautam Gambhir achieved that extraordinary price, some thought, from KKR, $2.4 million. And he came up and shook my hand and just said, thank you very much. And then last year, I did come back and watch quite a few games live in India, and I was delighted to meet up with Joss Butler at a hotel in Delhi, and he did indeed invite me to have a drink with him he was drinking a grapefruit juice. I had something stronger.
Totally.
On a side note, Richard, who's your favorite cricketer?
Oh, my favorite. Who is my favorite cricketer? And of course, I haven't talked about the book that I would love to share these stories with a much wider audience. And of course, I would talk about my favorite cricketers, but my favorite cricketer is somebody who will mean something to a number of your listeners. Indian wicketkeeper, batsman. Came over to Lancashire and stayed on 1967 tour. Farooq Engineer. And of course, I remember, you've got to think, I'm a lot older than you guys there. And to me, he was my favorite cricketer because he could stand up to really quick bowling. I used to admire him hugely. And not only was he a great player, he was a great person. And as a young player, he signed his autograph. I've still got the autograph that he signed. And I just remember thinking, what a nice man, what a gentleman. And he's still here. It still lives in England. Still lives in Lancashire and is just known as one of the great Indian cricketers who got adopted by England. So always a pleasure to meet him.
Excellent. I'm sure you would have fetched him a big price at the auction if he were around during the IPL era. Richard, pleasure talking to you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. And please send my very best to all my friends in India.